The Mets are on their way back.
World champions for the 27th time.
Home plate for all things Major League Baseball. This is the Nosebleeds Podcast on WFUV Sports.
Welcome into another edition of WFUV's very own Nosebleeds Podcast. I'm Grace McCarron, joined by Kurt Sippel and Tucker Austin. It is Wednesday, July 15th. We're through the first half of the 2026 MLB season. Last night we had the All-Star Game. The other night we had the Home Run Derby. We've got a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about the first half for our locals as well, and preview the second half, do some awards maybe for a little fun game. Lots going on, as per usual. But before we get into everything, Kurt, how are you doing? You were in Philadelphia. Why don't you tell us about that?
Man, a lot of travel. I woke up at 5 in the morning today to get back to New York. Took the subway back after I had to get dropped off from my dad's work. My parents traveled with me to Philadelphia. That was pretty cool, actually, get to spend some time with them in Philly, too. Overall, really cool experience. Citizens Bank Park is really nice, as much as I begrudgingly want to say that as a Mets fan. Citizens Bank Park is very nice. Doesn't really feel like it was built in 2005. It does not show the 20 years of age, in my opinion. Thought it was very nice. I thought the areas that we were in were really cool. Yeah, I think it was a really cool event and really fun thing to be a part of.
Tuck, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. You know, the All-Star experience from home was, I think it could have been a little bit better. Like, general thought on the whole thing, I thought Netflix's handling of the Home Run Derby was a little bit shaky. There were just some things in there that didn't really fit, i.e. the desk of comedians that they had trying to get the crowd hyped up. I thought that was an odd thing that they tried to kind of jam in there, but everything else about it I thought was fun. And then in terms of the All-Star game, I thought Fox also a little bit dropped the ball. Not entirely, but there was some weird audio mixing during this game. I remember the P. Crow Armstrong on-field interview when he was in the outfield, and you could kind of barely hear what he was saying in response to any question that the commentators would ask. So, Kurt, I think your experience and the experience in the stadium was probably the best one that you could have possibly had, just because of the way that like things were handled trying to get that broadcast at home. And also thought it was a little bit long. I thought the All-Star game was a little bit longer than it needed to be. They started the festivities overall at 8 p.m., so they didn't really get onto the field and start playing until around 8:30, and they also had two different like patriotic-related songs built in, including God Bless America and America the Beautiful, and a fireworks show in the middle. And, like, yes, the Sandlot reference, yes, that all that's cool, but, like, the biggest issue I've seen is like journalists complaining that the building was too, like, a third empty by the eighth inning. And it's like, yeah, because the eighth inning didn't start until like 11:15 last night. So at some point there's got to be a trade-off between how long you want to let the whole event run, or if you want it to be a baseball game within the parameters when baseball is usually played from like 7 to 10:30 is kind of our range now. But other than that, I really enjoyed the All-Star week this year. I thought it was a fun Home Run Derby field. And even with the missing players in the All-Star game, I thought it was a fun game as well. Who doesn't love an American League win? Come on. Who doesn't love Cody Bellinger as the MVP?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to lie.
I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead, Grace. No, I'm going to be honest. Oh.
Like, not going to lie. This might be controversial. I think it would make sense to not play a full 9 innings. Have it be like 7 innings. Because none of these players, we all forget, We all love the All-Star. Like I like the concept of the All-Star game. I think it's like a fun moment for all the players. They're all together, they're on the red carpet. Personally, not gonna lie, the red carpet is my favorite part of this. But none of them, they're all terrified of getting hurt, especially the guys who are like on the Dodgers who are probably gonna go to the World Series again. Like those guys, they're not gonna be the pitchers are not gonna be in there that long. If we shorten it to 7 innings, I'm not mad at that. Just because, like, again, the length part should not be taking that long, and also, take maybe a little bit of the injury risk, a smidge of the injury risk out of it. Obviously, that's if you play in the game, that's kind of a risk you just take. As we saw with Junior Caminero getting hit in the pinky, the x-rays on that came back negative, fortunately, but that was, if you're a Rays fan, that's a really, really bad moment. But yeah, let's actually, Kurt, what were you gonna say? Go ahead.
Oh no, I was going to completely agree. I thought the game was entirely really long, and also being there for it, it was one of the more boring baseball games I think I've seen in recent history, which is kind of a disappointing to say because you're watching an all-star game and an all-star team. But the Cody Bellinger hit was like the only exciting moment of the entire day, the Cody Bellinger and the Ben Rice moments. And then it felt like even like when we were in the press conferences, like fishing for questions, it felt like the like, oh, how great has pitching been? And don't get me wrong, the pitching was that good for the American League and the National League today, yesterday. But I still think that there should have been, it just did not have the oomph that it felt like. I think that's also why people were leaving in the eighth inning. It was nearly completely empty. It did not look like an all-star game past the eighth inning. The Sandlot moments, everything felt also just a little out of place sometimes when there was just like random like moments that there was in between game, in between not. There was just a lot of choppiness to it. There was not a lot of flow.
And that moment was cool too. Like it was a cool concept of having like doing the Sandlot bit where like turn all the lights off and start like playing and warming up under fireworks. But like they also had a group of like 12 kids ride out on their bikes from like right field and just like bike across the outfield to the infield. And it was like in that moment I was like, what the hell is going on? Like why aren't they playing baseball right now? But then it kind of was like, oh, okay, I get it. But that's like, it's gotta, I feel like it's gotta fit a little bit better than that. And like, they could have just done a fireworks show without like the whole bit with the kids and like, yeah, it's the kids from the Sandlot. But I 100% agree with you, Kurt. Like, there were things that could have been cut from this game that could have made it more stomachable for like the average fan trying to go to an all-star game. Like, even if the game is boring, if that game started at like 7 p.m. and then had still had an America the Beautiful, but didn't have like the whole weird bit with like setting it up. I still think that game is like way, way shorter. Like if you start introing players at 6:30 and first pitch is at or before 7:10, people aren't like streaming out of the stadium in the eighth inning. That's the big difference for me. I think it was just the timing of when they finally got this started that hurt them the most. I don't think it was about the players who missed because I saw a clip from Buster Olney this morning that seemed to be like trying to blame the fact that fans were leaving on the fact that the MLB couldn't get their like marquee players to play in this game, i.e., Shohei Ohtani and Vlad Guerrero Jr. and guys like Mizorowski not pitching and Cam Schlittler not pitching and Paul Skenes not pitching. But for me, like the fact that those guys didn't play does not take away from the talent of the guys who did play. Like there were still excellent players on that field, and it was still a like it still had the possibility for a really, really good game. And I guarantee you that third of fans that left in the eighth inning were National League fans. Like American League fans were very happy with this game. I was very happy with the way that this game went. Watching American League pitching carve up National League hitters gave me my first sense of hope against the National League that I've had in a very long time. The only thing that could have made this game better for me was if it still mattered in the long run and decided who gets home field advantage in the World Series. You want people to stay for the full nine at the All-Star game, make it decide who gets home field advantage in the World Series, and then watch the stadium be packed for the full nine.
I agree with that. I just, I think it's so different now with how players operate and how the league operates that I don't think they would ever go back to having it decide home field advantage. But I don't hate that idea. And yeah, like I saw a lot of criticism going around for some of the players not playing in the game, some of them not pitching. Like these guys have bigger aspirations than the All-Star game. Like, I'm sorry, it's an honor to be named an All-Star, but they have playoff aspirations. Most of the guys on these teams are probably going to the playoffs. Like, they want to preserve their bodies. They want to take the full break. Like, I don't think we can really fault them for that. And I also don't think I agree with what you said, Tug. Like, that's not really the reason the fans were leaving. I think it was that it's, a Tuesday night. Everyone has work in the morning, first of all. And it was going on too long. And that's just how it goes. But I want to go back to the Home Run Derby briefly. Jordan Walker, not gonna lie, at first did not remember that he was in the field. And what a surprise. I believe I sent a text that said, "Wow, I didn't know Jordan Walker was in the Home Run Derby. Good for him." And then what happened? So congratulations, Jordan Walker. Had a really, really good ending with Kyle Schwarber, where he hit six consecutive home runs to clinch the first ever home run derby by a Cardinal. Didn't know that before either. Obviously not very well versed on this year's home run derby, guys. But what did we think about the home run derby as an event? I know we talked a little bit about the coverage at the beginning, but Kurt, you were there. What was that like?
I thought the format was very cool. I thought I liked it a lot more than everyone was saying. I thought it was really funny after how Jeff Passan criticized it, and then after called himself a moron on Twitter. I thought that that was pretty funny. I think personally, the Home Run Derby, how it is now, is a really fun event. It has to be. It was very fun to be there in person. Another thing of like them kind of dragging it out. I know that you kind of have to drag it out because if you're paying over $300 for a ticket, and I told Bobby C that when I was sitting next to him, if I'm paying over $300 for a ticket, this better be close to a 3-hour event. And it was a 3-hour event. Because if it wasn't a 3-hour event, it would be kind of a scam for how much money that they put into it. Not really rushing it, which was nice. It felt paced well. It was really cool to see Kyle Schwarber, hometown kind of thing. Come out in the final. It was also really nice to see Jordan Walker play spoiler in Philly, another villain coming out. That was pretty funny. And anyone with not Philadelphia across their chest got booed really loud.
That was hilarious. I thought that was really funny.
Every
Some people were mad about that, and I was like, guys, come on, that's hilarious.
how? I like you really what else are we meant to expect from Philly sports fans? I mean,
Right.
like this is exactly the type of environment that I was expecting at least. I'm glad it went this way because otherwise I would have been a little bit disappointed
Yeah.
in the Phillies fans. But like shout out Jordan Walker. He made $1 million from winning the Home Run Derby. His salary this year is 775,000. So that's a pretty nice little bump in the pay that year. I thought it was really cool that he got to kind of like quote unquote walk off Kyle Schwarber in that last round, and it was on his last swing too, so it like had to happen. I think what did he hit, like five home runs in a row, I think it was, or
Yeah.
six in a row, I
Six.
think, to finish it off. Incredible performance from him. I loved the way that his home runs got out of there, like very low launch angle but high exit velo line drive home runs. It was a home run enjoyer's paradise, this
Yeah.
new the format they had this year, because you didn't have guys going as fast as they possibly can, hitting their next home run while the first one is still falling. And the players said this 2 nights ago as well, which I thought the player perspective on this is the most important, that getting to just enjoy the home run and watch the flight, all the fans getting to watch the flight, see where it lands, watch like the getting to watch like the majesty of a 490-foot bomb off the bat of Wilson Contreras, or a third deck shot from Jack Caglione, and everyone in the building is just watching this ball fly all at the same time. It was a really special way to do the home run derby now. I'm glad they finally switched off of the clock. The only thing they need to do now is bring back the out system, and then we're good. And that's and from there, we're 100% good. The one complaint I saw about this was that, like, the fact that it's 20 swings and not 10 outs means that, like, you are capped maximum 20 home runs in a round, or in the first round, I should say, because it went to 15 swings after that. And we used to have like some crazy totals every now and then in the first round, like a 22 or a 25 home runs that would really pace the entire field. But I can't say I actually hate having a cap on how many home runs you can hit in that first round, like make it a best of 20, because I mean, the way that we saw it two nights ago, nobody hit all 20 home runs. So for me, I think it puts that element of pressure that they had from the pitch clock. It still leaves that pressure on there, but at the same time also allows the player to pace themselves, take a few pitches, kind of reset mentally and get back into the swing mode that they want to be in. But shout out Jordan Walker. That was an awesome performance from him. Like you said, Kurt, beating Kyle Schwarber in Philadelphia, like with the fact that everybody who wasn't a Philly was made out to be the villain, and then a villain gets over and wins. And I also thought the moment with his family after was really, really cool. His dad was awesome. And his grandma was really, really cool. She was like telling all these little anecdotes about like him as a little kid, and they couldn't find cleats big enough to fit him. Or no, they couldn't find cleats small enough rather to fit him when he first like started trying to play baseball. So I thought it was a really a cool feel good moment for baseball, and especially for Jordan Walker and the Cardinals.
Yeah, great feel good mo moment for Jordan Walker, who's having like his best season this year. He's leading the National League in RBI. And he's had some struggles in the past. He was a top prospect. I was reading a lot about him yesterday. He hasn't really panned out thus far until this year. He's totally turned it around. So good for him. You said those line drive homers, Tuck. That's the people's home run right there. That's classic to me. I like 500 footers. I'm like, yeah, but sometimes you just want it right over the wall.
And one of the best parts of watching this derby this year was watching the difference between those younger players who come from the camp of hitting that is based in exit velocity and based in launch angle and trying to hit the ball as hard as you possibly can and like get it to leave kind of before it apexes. And then you had a guy like Wilson Contreras, who's from the old breed, who was just getting under the baseball and hitting it as high as he possibly could and just letting it travel. And letting the backspin get in there. And oddly enough, Murakami also did a little bit of that backspin and getting the ball to fly to get under it. Underwhelming performance from him, but I still think it was cool to have him there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, had some good all-star festivities, as I said. Red carpet's my favorite, but we don't have to get into that. Let's take a little bit more of a sad turn. We're through the first half of this 2026 season. It went so fast, as per usual, but that means it's time for our first half recaps for our local teams. I'm gonna get the bad one out of the way first. Let's start with the New York Mets. Finished the first half 40-57, which, if you told me that that would be the case in March, I would have laughed in your face and I would have called you a liar, and I would have been wrong. Because this is genuinely one of the probably two most disappointing teams of my life, that I've had the displeasure of watching. Swept by the Red Sox over the weekend. I was there on Friday for the whole flight issue with the Red Sox. That game, the Mets ended up losing. Seems like the most obvious Mets loss, honestly, ever, because whenever there's something that happens like that, they're not going to win, I fear. Zach Thornton on Sunday was impressive. I think he needs to be part of the rotation going forward. Partially because we're kind of low on good options there at the moment, but also because why not give the kid a chance in an obviously lost season? So I summed it up pretty briefly there, but Kurt, I'll start with you here. What is left to say about this team? Just like, what are your give me your thoughts, all of them.
Is there really anything left to say? I mean, you can't really talk about the Mets without saying how disappointing everything has been this entire season for them. The losingest team since last year when they went on that hot streak, they've just been awful. I mean, you know the book, The Worst Team Money Can Buy. I think this one takes the cake from them. And the Mets still pay Bobby Bonilla. So I think it's kind of insane that we're sitting here talking about this still, how this has happened. I don't even think a turnaround's out of the question at this point. I've tried to remain positive kind of all season, which is hard to do when you're watching a baseball team, when you go to the ballpark and there's not teams, seats wide open the almost the entire time. When 2 summers ago, I remember going to a baseball game on a Tuesday and it was sold out. So it's just kind of disappointing to see which direction this team has turned to. It's disappointing to be like one all-star in the all-star game, saying that Luke Weaver probably should have been an all-star for the Mets, but that's a different story. Having one all-star in the all-star game, really just not having any hope. It doesn't feel like there's any upward momentum. It feels like they're drowning and there's no coming to help. I think that's the best way I could describe it because there's nothing else to talk about. And I agree with the Thornton should be a part of the rotation. I mean, it doesn't matter anymore. They're going to probably be selling at the deadline anyway. So at the end of the day, you need who you're going to get. You're going to bring up a lot of young guys anyway. So might as well make it right now and might as well give them as much boost as they can and learn from the veterans as they have, as we have them at right now. If you trade Freddie Peralta, he might not have the chance to learn from him. So why not have that right now where you're learning from the guys and being in the locker room? That's really all.
I think at the very least, Juan Soto likely would have been an all-star either way. Yes, there was only one Met rep at the all-star game this year, and there has to be at least one rep from every team. I mean, before this all-star game, I was kind of trying to I was trying to like trash talk the Mets a little bit because the Giants sent two players and they have a worse record, I think, than the Mets do at the All-Star break. But still, I think Juan Soto is not, he was not at the All-Star game for charity for the Mets to have one player. I think he would have been either way. He leads the Mets in most offensive categories, which again, that's also a thing that I think the Met, if there was anything to hang your hat on this season, I think you could hang your hat on the fact that Juan Soto is not being a bust for his contract right now. He is leading the team in most categories, as he probably should be. It's he's just not really opposed in any way by anybody who's on the Mets with him. So yeah, I mean, what can you say? You guys have pretty much summed it up for the Mets. It's they and I've been saying this for a while, they kind of just need like the heater of a lifetime. They need to go on a huge winning streak over the course of 2 to 3 weeks to get themselves back in the conversation in the first place, let alone the winning streak they would then need to go on to put themselves back into a playoff position. It's not going to start easy either. Their first game out of the All-Star break is against the
Philadelphia.
Phillies in Philadelphia. So Juan Soto, go ahead and stay in Philly and just wait for the team to show up on Thursday. Weird series though, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, no game Friday.
Oh, I don't like that.
I think that's an odd look, but at least that's what the schedule says. Maybe it's wrong, but if that is the case, that's kind of a weird way to start the second half. But you know, maybe there's a little bit of All-Star break hangover for the Phillies. They had a lot of players go. You had Kyle Schwarber and Bryce Harper in the home run derby, and Kyle Schwarber led off for the National League in the All-Star game itself. So I think the Mets will certainly be more rested than the Philadelphia Phillies. The Phillies have definitely turned their season around, but I don't think it would be ridiculous for the Mets to go in there, take a game, maybe 2 games. You take your first series after the All-Star break, and you can start to build second half momentum. And the Mets just need to take things one game at a time at this point. You can't look at the season as a whole because every time you look at the standings and see that you're 16 games out in your division, like it's gonna cause the whole locker room to sink again. So it's got to be game by game here.
I think they Kurt, you mentioned Freddy Peralta. I love him. He's got to go with the deadline, though. He has to go. Get whatever you can get for some of these people. If they can, now Mark Vientos is on the IL now, so his trade value might be tanked. If they can get something for Mark Vientos, I hate to say it because 2 years ago I would have laughed at you if you had said that, but you might have to try and get something for Mark Vientos. I fear Luke Weaver, same thing. You can get a lot for Luke Weaver because he's very good and I love him, but like you have to eventually, as a team, and I know no executive wants to be the one to do this, but you have to say like, okay, we're gonna have to start thinking about 2027 here, which is not like the worst thing in the world. They've done that before. Like, it's the worst thing in the world because you had World Series aspirations going into this year. So I would say cut your losses now. Just know where you are. The National League is not an easy league, and neither is their division. Even like, I mean, the Marlins have been on a heater. Like, it's not like it's going to be easy to sneak in back into the playoff race, even if they do go on a crazy heater. And it would have to be one of the great heaters we've ever seen for them to even be back in the conversation. So, yeah, that's kind of that. But I
I mean,
have
Peralta's
seen.
got two starts. He's got two starts coming up before, at minimum two
Right.
starts before the trade deadline. If he performs well, is he still a sale piece at the deadline, or do you hold on to him and look to the future? Because he's starting against the Brewers. At least he's scheduled to start against the Brewers in Milwaukee on July 20th, and then will likely pitch again against the Dodgers before the deadline. So pitching against his former team and then pitching against probably the best team in Major League Baseball. If he puts in two good starts there, do you look at maybe not trading him?
I still look to trade him because he's mentioned, I think it was before the season, but he talked about he wants a long-term extension, like 8 years. And I'm apprehensive about that for pitchers anyway, but we've seen what we've seen with him so far this year. I don't think they're really in a position to give out an 8-year deal to a guy who has significantly underperformed this year. I don't think that makes sense. So if you know that he's gonna be out after this year anyway, like might as well get something for him now. That's my thought. I don't know what the market's gonna be like for him because he has been very disappointing as a Met. Like, I hate to say it, but he was supposed to be the ace, and you can have your thoughts on whether that made any sense as a move in the first place. Maybe he's not ace caliber. I don't know. But I think at this point, with the way the team is going and with what we know he wants in the future, cut your losses now. See what you can get for him. But I did want to bring up one more point on the Mets. I've seen some chitter chatter about Francisco Lindor's status on this team. Some people think they should try to trade him. Some people think that's ridiculous because of that contract and because he's one of the faces of the Mets, no matter what your feelings are about the guy. Kurt, you're a Mets fan. Why don't you go first? What do you think Mets
I
should
don't think that
do?
you should trade Francisco Lindor. I understand the reason why you might want to trade Francisco Lindor. The whole entire contract that he's on, as well as just right now a lost season, might try to salvage for parts. And you could probably get some good stuff for Francisco Lindor, even though he's having a pretty down year. I know he was injured, but still, even that point, he's been kind of bad re coming back. He had a few errors in the field. He had that key error against Boston that lost him the game when he just kind of fell on his face, literally fell on his face, which I still can't believe that happened. I don't think you trade Francisco Lindor. Yet again, I've talked about this before with the Pete Alonso thing, where it's the face of your franchise. You kind of want to keep guys that have been around a while, helps morale of the fan base. Because people are coming to see somebody that they've always wanted to see. Kids like Francisco Lindor. I think the owner, Steve Cohen, when he talked about how there's going to be no captain ever in his ownership tenure of the Mets, kind of made it a little weird with Francisco Lindor, because he should have been the captain, and he should have been named the captain. But overall, I don't think you trade Lindor. I think you keep it as is at the moment. And right now the vibes seem a little bit better with the young guys, and Juan Soto even said it during All-Star game. He said that he thinks that all of the young guys will be there and Lindor. So we'll see what happens. I think that there's more hope in the locker room than I think we're seeing, and I think keeping Lindor is a good piece of that.
I definitely agree. I don't think you can get rid of Lindor. I've been a huge supporter of trying to drum up fake locker room disagreements between Lindor and Juan Soto and trying to like fabricate a rift between the two of them. But like at this point I just feel too bad about the Mets to try like to continue trying to sabotage their locker room. So I'm gonna say definitely hold on to Francisco Lindor. He's been a cornerstone of this team for quite some time now. Yes, the defense has been weird this year, but it's been weird for the whole team. It's kind of like how it feels watching Yankee baseball when they're not playing good defense because like it's really contagious. I don't know what it is, but when the simple plays can't get made like they're supposed to, it's infectious and the whole team starts to doubt themselves and their own ability. We're second guessing where to throw the ball. And then we're sailing the bag and we're throwing it around like it's a circus. Like these are things that can get worked out of a team's culture by just focusing on, like I said before, focusing on every day in a vacuum and just moving forward and just trying to win every day. I don't think you trade Francisco Lindor. He's extremely important to this team when he's hot, and even when he's not hot, he's still a leader in that locker room. So I think him and Soto can easily be built around. It's just about now trying to figure out what to do with the rest of these pieces. Because kind of like we said earlier this year, trying to replace Pete Alonso in the aggregate was not the right plan. A guy like Pete Alonso, you want to keep or replace with a equivalent player, but not players. So yeah, I definitely think they have to keep Lindor if they want any semblance of trying to build towards next year. I mean, if you blow everything up except Juan Soto, then I really don't know what kind of conversations we're going to have in the off season. But if you keep Lindor and Soto, I think there's just that little bit more hope that makes next year look a little bit better.
Well, Tuck, you mentioned the beef between Soto and Lindor you've been trying to drum up. Steve Cohen
And it's
basically
not just
told the
me. It,
Post
like
that that was
that beef has been
true.
trying to get drummed up by everybody.
Steve Cohen told the Post columnists that they are now getting along better. So apparently last year there were some problems, but last year is last year. That was also terrible. So whatever. If they are really getting along better, perfect. If they're not, maybe get that together soon because it's certainly not helping. All right, now let's turn it over to the other side of the city. Little bit bluer skies in the Bronx, I would say. The Yankees finished their first half 54 and 42. They had their seven was a 7-game losing streak. They had their little skid in the summer. They kind of do that every year, but then they kind of broke out of it at the end there, swept the Nats in DC to end off their first half. Tucker, give us your thoughts. How are you feeling?
Well, I mean, like you said, it's definitely a better outlook than the Mets have right now. I think this Yankee team has done pretty much almost what I would have needed out of them to get after the division in the second half. They've been waiting for Judge to come back this whole time, and that's pretty much been the hinge of my argument since he got injured, was that this Yankee team just needs to play essentially 500 baseball to stay in the fight until Judge comes back, and then start to ramp up again and expect to win more games than they lose. But man, June was a tough month for them. Judge goes out at the end of May after their second straight full month with a winning record. They went 16-10 in April, 16-12 in May, that last week, pretty or that last series in May, not even the last week, but only the last series against the Guardians with no Aaron Judge. But then in June, they go 12-14, and that didn't hurt as bad as it could have, because like you mentioned, there was that losing streak in there. Their longest of the season happened in June. They did manage to kind of turn things around a little bit. And then in July, so far, they're 6-5. They did sweep the Nationals out of Washington to go into the All-Star break, which I thought was huge. Before that series, I said it was a series they could very well sweep and probably should. They did just that, but it was a very nerve-wracking series. All of the wins were late-game comebacks, seventh inning or later, usually eighth inning or later. You had the Jazz Chisholm home run late in the ninth in the first game. A lot of late hitting. Ben Rice involved as well. Trent Grisham also got involved a little bit in that series. So the Yankees have been finding production from guys that they don't usually ask. It's not quite next man up as it was like 3 or 4 years ago, but once Aaron Judge comes back, I think this team has a very, very high ceiling. I think they're still within range, in my opinion, to get to 90 wins, if they can really get the ball rolling. But that also would, that would be predicated by Max Fried coming back and being in form, Carlos Rodon coming back from his injury and being in form. So a fully functional rotation, plus Aaron Judge back. The whole Giancarlo Stanton situation has been really disappointing to me, because he had a really good start to the year. And after that World Series and postseason performance in 2025, it really seemed like he found that sort of that twilight push in his career, that last like couple of years that he would be able to squeeze the real vintage out of him. But another injury that's kept him out for most of the year this year. I mean, Stanton would have been an all-star had he not gotten hurt as early as he did. And now he's still out, and we'll probably see Judge again before Stanton comes back. So that whole situation, like I said, has been really disappointing, but the Yankees get those couple of pitchers back. They get Aaron Judge back, and it kind of solves the outfield situation, because they've been slotting a lot of guys in and out of the outfield without Aaron Judge in the order, especially when they lost Grisham briefly. That got a little hairy, but I think the ceiling is like probably 90 wins. There's no way they get to 100 wins at this point. We only have 60 some odd games to go here. So I think the plan at the deadline definitely has to be to buy. They could fill the catcher position is the biggest one for me. The problem is I don't know who is going to be willing to give up their good hitting catcher or their good right-handed hitting catcher for anything that the Yankees would be offering, and it would likely be prospects. I don't think the Yankees are in a position to offer anybody who is currently on the major league roster. There's too many guys they rely on in the bullpen already, and filling roles offensively. I think like you got guys like Ahmed Rosario and Ryan McMahon who are platooned at third base. Neither of them can really get moved in a trade, because then one of them would have to be the full-time third baseman. Volpe's not getting moved because the front office is married to Anthony Volpe for whatever reason. So he's not going anywhere, which also leaves a problem of Jose Caballero. Like, you got to keep him, but where do you even play him? Because you got to play Jazz Chisholm at second. So There are decisions that need to be made going to the deadline. If I were in that room, I would be trying to shop Anthony Volpe, because Caballero has clearly outperformed him this year. And I don't think there's any there's not that much downside between Volpe and if you keep Caballero and let Volpe go or trade him somewhere. Whatever Volpe comes up with the rest of his career, I don't think it's going to super eclipse Jose Caballero. Will it be a little bit better? Maybe. Is it going to be like a nuclear mistake if they get rid of Volpe at this point? I don't think so. They've given him so much time and so much credence to try and figure it out, that to the point where I don't think it would be that ridiculous for them to move on from him. At the same time, I also just don't think they will. So big thing. So like, just to sum up for the Yankees, get those pitchers back, get Aaron Judge back, and get the gears turning again, because we've seen that the hitting is still there when it wants to be, but when it has its captain back, it'll be there every single day.
Kurt?
I think the Yankees definitely are relying on Aaron Judge pretty heavily. I mean, it's pretty much judge and friends. I feel like that Yankee team pretty much. I
But
think you
shout out
try
to
to
Ben
change.
Rice, though. He did make a home
Oh,
run
Ben.
derby appearance. He had a better performance than Jazz Chisholm. Not a
Appearance
very
is
high
definitely
bar,
the key
but we will
point.
take
Definitely
it.
key.
His dad was pitching to him in the derby, so I'll give him credit for vibes. I don't think he was going in there trying to win the whole thing. I think he was just trying to have a fun experience, and I think he did just that. I mean, it was fun to see Ben Rice out there, just having fun. And then he knocked in a run in the All-Star game.
I don't think you enter the home run derby not to win it. His dad should be signed to the major league roster because the way he was pitching around Ben Rice was pretty impressive. But either way, I think personally that Jazz Chisholm and Anthony Volpe are probably the two people that the Yankees should probably try to move. The issue is that you might not even get a bag of pretzels for either of them, so it would be pretty difficult to move them. Anthony Volpe has pretty much no value. I think Major League Baseball has seen what Anthony Volpe is. And he's just not that impressive. It's not what he was promised to be. Strikeout king, pretty much, it feels like. I mean, he's been better in the field just a little bit, but the Yankees in general haven't been that great in the field, so you can't really slight him as much anymore. But either way, I think that it's him and Jazz Chisholm Jr., and I think that they'd be very difficult to move for the Yankees, as I reiterate. But it's, I feel like those are the moves that you try to make to try to win a World Series if you're the Yankees. But I think you have a good opportunity to try to go to the World Series this year. I don't think you can beat the National League. The Dodgers are a powerhouse. The Dodgers are one of the more difficult teams to go up against in the Major League Baseball level. And the American League just really isn't very good right now. So I think that that is the way that they can have like their Knicks run and try to run to a championship while the rest of the league right now is just kind of bad.
Yeah, I think this is definitely the year for them to go to the World Series without a ton of pushback from the rest of the American League. Like the Rays are legit. I was, a little bit skeptical of the Rays because I was, a few Junior Caminero and the rest of them, but the Rays are for real, I think. But that's really the only team that is for real to me. The Red Sox also had their hot streak. But that also included sweeps of the Angels and the Mets, so do with that what you will. So I don't know if the Red Sox are really actually turning this thing around. But I would say the Yankees they have a really good shot here. And listen, you better hope Aaron Judge comes back soon because I also think this offense is far less than it needs to be when Aaron Judge is out of the lineup, which, listen, it's understandable when you have a multi-time MVP in your lineup. That's going to be the bulk of the offense in any situation. Like, you have guys like Ben Rice, Cody Bellinger. They have other guys that can hit. Sometimes it all comes together, sometimes it all falls apart.
I mean, in a perfect world, they have two former MVPs on their
Right.
roster in
Right.
two different
And Stanton.
leagues.
Yes,
Like
exactly.
when Stanton and Judge are in that lineup, it opens up so many options for other guys to produce, especially with Bellinger. I mean, like Bellinger went from being pretty much the guy that you ask third to knock in runs to the 1A option for scoring. And like he's suddenly become the four or the five hitter after most of the season being the two hitter. And like, yes, he's a good hitter and he can hit the ball out, but this is not a guy that you're asking to anchor your offense. Like he's supposed to be that sort of like sweetener piece to make it just that much better. And when pitchers have to go after him early in the count because they know that Judge and Stanton are coming up and they have to use like a significant number of pitches to get by those guys, it makes him so much better. And I have said this before, I think the same thing happened with Paul Goldschmidt when they were putting him up in the order like leading off. When they have to pitch to Goldschmidt because they know Judge and Stanton are looming, it makes Goldschmidt a better hitter too, and it works the same for everybody else in the lineup. So yes, Judge is a huge part of it, but I think the Judge and Stanton combo is what really makes this offense kick into a higher gear. And in terms of the rest of the league, yes, the Rays are always like this. So at this point, I've come to expect that there'll be a problem every single year, regardless of payroll or who's on their team. In terms of the rest of the American League, yeah, I mean, it kind of seems right now like the Yankees have a great opportunity to go to the World Series. I am a little bit concerned by how much underachieving has gone on by the Yankees against the AL Central. It's not been like it has been for the last 10 to 15 years of essentially dominance by the Yankees over the Central. It's not been the same, even though the Central itself is like notably bad. But I think most of that is just them like cannibalizing themselves. Like, it's just Central teams beating each other constantly and keeping everybody's record down. They're better than they appear to be. That or the Yankees just have no idea how to beat Central teams anymore, and that could be a problem in an early round in the playoffs. So I'm hesitant to say World Series at this time because there are parts of this team that still scream postseason collapse. I mean, for me, the defense is the biggest thing. The fact that they can't go a week without having a game that's significantly impacted by errors, that's a problem for me. And if that doesn't go away in this second half, I think it'll rear its head again in the playoffs, and they probably won't make the World Series. But it's going to be about stars aligning at the right time, at the right time in late September and early October, where the pitching is there, the hitting is hot, and the defense is solid. It doesn't even have to be stellar. It just has to like just make the routine plays routine, and that should be fine. Don't even ask me about the World Series. It's the Dodgers. It's probably the Dodgers. Who doesn't think it's the Dodgers? They literally have the best roster. They can win games in any way that you can imagine. Getting to the World Series as an American League team would effectively be winning the World Series this year, because after that, it doesn't really matter what happens in the actual World Series because it's the Dodgers.
Now, speaking of the Dodgers, great segue there. Big Dodgers series with the Yankees coming out of the break at Yankee Stadium. Three night games. I will be there Sunday because I was asked, actually, why, Grace, would you want to be there? Because I, you know, can't say I'm a fan of either team, and I just like baseball, and I've nothing going on next weekend, so why the heck not? But three primetime games. Tuck, how are you feeling about this one? Because I'm excited, personally.
Well, I'll be there on Friday. It's an exciting series. It's fun anytime the Dodgers come to Yankee Stadium. I also think it's a fun experience watching the Yankees go on the road to LA, save the one year when Judge busted his toe on the wall and then missed half the season. I like when they come to, especially when they come back to New York. I think it's fun just because of the whole Brooklyn Dodgers history, and just having that team, or like the descendant of that team, back in New York City. It's always a fun experience. But in terms of the actual, in Yankee terms, no, I'm very scared. Arrested Dodgers team coming out of the All-Star break, and they're getting ready to go. They're 30-17 on the road this year. Extremely, extremely good at winning games on the road. I think based on that number, they've almost lost the same number of games at home and away, and it's not that many. So, I mean, I think they have the best record in baseball. I'm not 100% sure, but it's 61-36. They're sitting very pretty. So, tentatively excited, I would say, is the best way to describe it, because it will be a fun series. I just don't know who it's going to be fun for, and I'm leaning Dodgers.
I'm excited. I do feel like maybe there's a little less juice just because Judge isn't going to be there. And like, it's more fun when you have like Judge versus Ohtani. Like, I'm, you know, I'm a sucker for those kind of matchups. But Kurt, what do you think Dodger series coming out of the break? Are you excited?
I mean, what's like, there to be?
You're like, I don't care. Actually.
What is there to be excited about? I mean, I agree with you. I do like baseball. Those will be primetime games. Very exciting stuff. But when Judge isn't in the lineup, it just kind of,
yeah.
I mean, like, it's not as exciting. And don't get me wrong, I know it's like the you go and watch the sport because you think it's fun, but at the end of the day, you want to see the stars match up with each other. You want to see that happen. And when it doesn't happen, it's sometimes disappointing. And for the price of entry for those games, I'm assuming, you really want to see those matchups. So it's a little disappointing that you're not going to see them.
Actually, I'm trying to remember. I think my ticket was like $60, but that was
It's
Sunday
not
was the
bad.
cheapest day. So anyway, we have that coming up. And then Dodgers also go to Citi Field next weekend, which will be in Cooperstown. So we won't have to experience that, which I think is a blessing personally. Again, as much as I like to see stars play, as much as I like watching players like Ohtani in person, I think I'm okay this time. But let's wrap up with some first half awards. Let's go round table. Give us, Kurt, do you want to start? Give us your AL and NL MVPs for the first half.
Oh my God, that's a really hard question.
I know. I think my
I
answer
actually,
is now.
I don't even have. I think for the Cy Youngs, it's pretty obvious. I think you can give it to Schwitler, in the AL, because he's just been pretty dominant. And I mean, no one really assumed how great he was going to be. And the addition to him for the Yankee rotation, I think, has helped them, tremendously. For my NL, Jacob Mizorowski, he has 24 of the 25 fastest pitches this year. The other one is, and of course, an Ohtani pitch. He is just incredible. And seeing him in All-Star Weekend, he's the most unassuming dude on the planet. You would never think that that guy can throw 105 miles an hour. You'd never think he has this stuff that he does, just because he's just a guy. I mean, that's the best way I could describe him, because he doesn't look very special. He's a tall and lengthy dude, and he's just kind of and it's just kind of incredible to see what he's doing with the mechanics that he has. Oh man, I don't. This is really difficult for me to give an MVP. Can you come back to me for that? I don't really know
Yes.
who to choose.
We'll do Cy Young's first. Tuck, you want to go?
Yeah, and honestly, I like the Mizorowski pick. I think I would be kind of betraying my own thoughts on the game of baseball to say someone different just for the sake of saying someone different, because Mizorowski has been unbelievable this year. Like Kurt was saying, like, insane fastball, but also has really good control over his other pitches. That slider is also very, very fast. Upwards of 92 miles an hour on a slider is absolutely filthy. Shades of Jacob deGrom. I just hope his elbow can stay intact for as long as possible. Very, very good ERA. A lot of innings, and like, I try to look down the rest of the National League, like trying to find some other option, and he's really in a league of his own. There's a couple of pitchers who have more wins than him, but they've also given up like a handful more runs, and they haven't struck out as many guys. The WHIP also stands out to me. A 0.76 walks and hits per innings pitched for Mizorowski outpaces the league, the rest of the National League at least, easily. Yamamoto is the only other pitcher with a WHIP under one, so I like that pick, Kurt, for Cy Young. But in terms of an MVP, I think we want to stay away from a pitcher, right? Because we're saying Cy Young is effectively like the pitching MVP for the first half. So then we'll like try to find a hitter. I don't want to necessarily go with like the best home run hitter. But I also want to go with a player who is playing for a team that actually matters at the same time. So, like, I mean, when you look at the stats, Juan Soto's had a great year. Am I going to say he's the first half MVP? No, because the Mets are just not playing good baseball. I also can't necessarily say James Wood either, because he's had a great first half, but the Nationals aren't really where they would like to be either. The next guy who kind of comes up, winds up being Shohei Ohtani, but he's injured. So I think my first half MVP for the National League is going to be. Wow, this is a harder question. Yeah, Kurt, you're right. This is a harder question than I really thought initially. I'm going to say, let's just go with Freddie Freeman for the Dodgers. Why not? He's had plenty of hits, maybe not as much of the pop as he usually has. But it's for a team that matters. It's for a team that's playing like the best baseball, arguably in the league. Freeman is not really up there on OPS as much as I would like. I guess I've become sort of a bigger OPS guy when trying to do like full season stats. But honestly, he's the most impressive player for me on the best team in the league. So, who's still healthy? I mean, Ohtani would probably take it if he wasn't injured right now. So, I'll go with Freeman for that.
All right. Cy Young's got to be Schlittler and Mizorowski. I wanted to try and divert on the National League one, but when you look at the Miz, it's just he's in a league of his own. MVP though. Yeah, I kind of stumped myself with this question. American League. Let me look at some categories here.
I like the Schlittler pick for AL. I actually kind of forgot to do American League ones. I like the Schlittler pick for the American League. It's been a Cy Young front runner for a majority of the season. He did trip up a little bit at the end of June, but kind of found it again in his next couple of starts. He's got one of the lowest ERAs in the league, lowest in the American League by 50 points or so. Also has a whip under one, but a few pitchers in the AL have done that so far. The strikeout numbers look solid. Dylan Cease has a few more in three fewer starts, which I thought was interesting, and a pretty good whip. So I don't necessarily want to say Dylan Cease, but I mean he did start the All-Star game. But yeah, you know what? I'll agree. I'll give it to Cam Schlittler. And then I'm actually going to go with a bit of a hater pick for the AL MVP. I'm going to say it's Yordan Alvarez.
I was gonna say him too.
Yeah, he's got the
Damn it.
highest OPS in baseball and the second highest average in the league. So right now he is on pace, maybe not necessarily in the home run department, because I think Kyle Schwarber does have 32. Yes, he does, but he's trailing Kyle Schwarber by one. Yordan Alvarez is in the home run department, has the lead in OPS, is just behind the lead in average. Guys, there hasn't been a triple crown in Major League Baseball since Miguel Cabrera, but Yordan Alvarez might be our best chance at getting another one. And I hate to say that as a D1 Astros hater, but a good hitter is a good hitter. They're not allowed to use trash cans anymore, and he is hitting the baseball au naturel. So I'm going to go with Alvarez for the first half MVP in the American League. And then, yeah, I'll agree with Schlittler for Cy Young.
I would take Alvarez as well. I'm going to give a little love to James Wood,
Okay.
who's been just killing it for the Nationals. Although the Nationals have their issues. I mean, James Wood during that Yankee series last weekend was basically putting the team on his back, getting them in there every single game. He leads the National League with a 985 OPS. We should mention Yordan Alvarez also leads the American League in OPS by a pretty large margin over Ben Rice. But yeah, James Wood, I mean, if you want to talk about, like, I know some people are like, you can't be an MVP of a bad team. I disagree. I think it actually makes a lot of sense. And the Nationals are not bad by any means, but like, he's really, really good. And he is a big, big part of that team. And he's only going to get better. So I would maybe give him the nod right now. I don't know. We have to see. There's a lot of great options. Obviously, it's kind of hard to not have it be like Ohtani. Or even Kyle Schwarber, who's leading in home runs right now. But anyway, Kurt, we said we'd go back to you. What do you have to tell
Well, I
us?
was going to also pick Alvarez. That was a pretty easy pick. 31 home runs. He's on pace for one of his, I think, his best season of his entire career right now. 318 batting average. I mean, he's been really impressive right now. And you know what? My NL MVP, Juan Soto. That's
I don't
it.
even need more of an explanation from you. I think
I don't need an explanation.
that's a great note for us to end on. Well, that'll do it for the first half of the 2026 MLB season. We will be back next week with obviously far more baseball content. There's still loads and loads of season left, loads and loads to talk about for both locals and around the league. But for today, I'm Grace McCarron, joined by Tucker Austin, Kurt Sipple, and we'll chat next week.